tragedy there.
Okay, so we are in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tes Vav, chapter 15, which is also the Haftarah for Parsha Zachar. And we got up to around Pasuk Yafez, I think. We did Yud Aleph, and basically what has happened is that Shaul was commanded by Shmuel, by the Navi, based on Hashem's command, to go and wipe out Amalek. It was a very clear instruction to kill everyone, all the people, and to destroy all of the livestock. He does not listen. Maybe at the urging of the people himself, right? The pasuk says, it's actually in pasuk Ches first, it says that Vayitpos is Agag Melech Amalek Chai, he took Agag alive. And then it says in pasuk Ches, Vayachmol Shaul V'ha'am Al Agag. And Shaul and the nation, they had mercy on Agag and on the best of the livestock, and they left that. So even though they were commanded to destroy it, they did not. They had chemla. They had some kind of mercy on it. So in Pasuk Yud Aleph, we read last time, Hashem says, "I'm nichamti kim lefti yashal lemelech." I regret, or I have a change of heart in that I appointed Shaul as king because he has strayed from my path. So Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayashkim Shmuel Likra Shaul Ba Boker. And Shmuel got up to greet Shaul in the morning. Vayugad l'Shmuel Lemor, it's page 12, 15, I guess. Vayugad l'Shmuel Lemor, and it was told to Shmuel saying, Ba Shaul ha-Karmel. Shaul has come to Carmel. Vinei matzivlo yad. And behold, he is... not clear what this means. He's standing up a hand. He's holding up a hand. Vayisov, or matziv from the word matzeva. He's making some kind of matzeva, some kind of
marker, maybe.
Marker, yeah, that's a good word. Vayisov, vayavar, vayered hagilgo. And he went around and he passed and he went down to the Gilgal. I don't know why we need so many expressions of exactly how he traveled, but what? So what's going on in this pasuk? What? Shmuel now comes to greet Shaul, and Shmuel is told that Shaul has come to Carmel, and what he's done there is he's matziv lo yad. So what did he do? So it's very interesting shot here, given by the Malbim. Just on a pshat level, fascinating thing, kind of surprising. The Malbib says he made a tzion, a sign, a marker, a remembrance of his victory. And on it he put the image of a hand. Matziv lo yad, he made a matzeva of a hand to show, to represent his strong hand that he showed in his victory over Amalek. So he destroyed Amalek, right? He left Agag alive, left some animals, but he destroyed the people. He was victorious in his eyes. He had accomplished a great feat. He showed his great might. And so he made a matzeva. He made a statue of his hand to show his great strength. A very surprising idea, really, especially in all of what we've talked about, Shaul's humility, maybe sometimes even misplaced humility. And here, according to the Malbim, he's building a matzeva of a great hand. So that's a very surprising shot.
Why it was his strength.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's very surprising. It's a very surprising idea. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's what the Malbim says. Perhaps I was thinking of a different pshat, similar, but maybe he made a hand. Maybe it somehow relates. Again, we have to figure out how to formulate it exactly. But what the Torah says in Parshas Kisetze, when it talks about Amalek and the mitzvah to destroy Amalek, so it says Yad al Keska, because there's a hand on the throne of Hashem. That somehow, right, the case is spelled chaser, the word case, which is from the word kisei, which means Hashem's throne. So it's spelled there without an aleph. And there's this idea that that Amalek, when they attacked Klal Yisrael, they sort of make a dent in the throne of Hashem that won't be repaired until Amalek is destroyed. And actually, it's not in this pasuk. Is in Bishala, not in Kisetze. Pasuk in Bishala, very end of Bishala. Vayivay Moshe Mizbeach, over there Moshe Alton builds a Mizbeach, and he says Vayomer Ki Yad Al Kes Ka, because there's a hand on the throne of Hashem. And again, like I said, it somehow means that Amalek Hashem's throne isn't complete until Amalek is destroyed. I believe even Rashi says that here.
Rambam makes essentially the same point. Rambam adds introduction to his
commentary. Well, actually, interestingly, Rashi's first shot here, he says, Yad al keska, yado shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, purma li shava bekiso, lios lo melchama ve'eva v'amalek olamis. It's kavayachol as if Hashem's hand is raised in a shvuah, to take an oath to destroy it, to have an eternal hate for Amalek and to wish for their destruction. So that's actually Rashi says. I thought I always understood. Maybe there's a different pshat that it's Amalek's hand that's against Amalek. Either way, perhaps this matzeva of a yad, this statue of a hand that Shaul builds somehow relates to that yad, either as the hand that Hashem's oath, that he's saying Hashem's oath is now fulfilled because I've destroyed Amalek. Or as the representing the hand of Amalek that was against the throne of Hashem, but now it's been destroyed. Perhaps that could be a pshat. So that's all working with assuming that the matzeva was an actual hand. However, Rashi and other mefarshim, I think based on Chazal, understand that it means he built a mizbeach. He built a mizbeach, a matzeva of a mizbeach, an altar. And they point out that this is the same Mizbeach that Eliyahu HaNavi uses on Har HaKarmel when he has his whole showdown with the Nevi'e HaBaal, with the false prophets of the Baal, famous episode with Eliyahu HaNavi. So over there, it says, in Melachim Aleph, it says, it says that he came to Har HaKarmel and he repaired the Mizbeach that was destroyed. So apparently, you see that there was already a Mizbeach on Har HaKarmel. So Rashi says, based on Chazal, that Mizbeach that he repaired was this Mizbeach that Shaul HaMelech built at Har HaKarmel. The Mishpat Zozav brings down a very interesting thing from the Shmuel Vosmer, the Shevar HaLevi. He asked the question, famous Gemara, that Hashem looked over all the other mountains and chose Har Sinai to give the Torah on because Har Sinai was a low mountain and it represents humility. So he passed over Har HaKarmel and other mountains. So So the Shever HaLevi, Shever HaLevi says that, right, it says that, you know, he passed over Har Tavor and he passed over Har HaKarmel. He didn't put places, he didn't give the Torah on a high mountain, he gave the Torah on a smaller mountain. So the Shever HaLevi asks, why is it, though, that we find that there was a great revelation of Hashem's might on Har Tavor at the event of Sisera? Sisera was the general of the Plishtim, that there was a great battle against Devorah and Barak and the people of that time in the beginning of Shoftim. So there was a great miracle and a great revelation on Har Tavor. And also we have the famous this episode that I'm mentioning of Eliyahu on Har HaKarmel, this famous episode. So he asked, why is it, you know, we say the Torah had to be given on Har Sinai, which was a low mountain, but on the other hand, we have these high mountains where we have these great miracles and great revelations of Hashem's might. So the Shever HaLevi explained that in order for a person to receive Torah and to accept Torah, so that requires humility, right? In order to be mevatel ourselves, to nullify our own opinions and ourselves before the word of the Ribono Shel Olam, of the Master of the World. So that takes humility. We have to say, I don't know everything, you know, I'm gonna follow what the Torah says. So the Torah has to be given on the mountain that represents humility. However, when it comes to going to battle against Kofrim, against deniers, and against Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and against idolaters, idol worshippers, so there you need the midah of Vayikva Libo B'Darchei Hashem. You need the midah of his heart was raised up. You need pride. You need to stand tall against Ovdei Avodah Zarah. That's not a time for humility. That's a time for strength and for might and for standing tall. That's why the great miracles of Hashem's revelation against the Plishtim, against Sisera, and against the Nevi'e Abal occurred on these taller mountains. He goes on to say, I'm not sure if he's quoting the Shever HaLevi or this is the Mishpatot Zav himself talking, and he says that we know that what caused Shaul's chait, what was Shaul's issue here? Too much humility. he didn't stand up to the people. He wasn't a strong leader. He says, therefore, that's why the Mizbeach that he built in this place was destroyed. And Eliyahu had to come and rebuild it in a situation of standing up, you know, proudly for Hashem and for belief in Hashem and against those idolaters. I don't think so. Why? Well, no, we're working in the pshat now that it wasn't a hand, it was a mizbeach. So if it was a mizbeach, right, it was just, you know, so then he's saying the reason why it was destroyed was because he built it on this mountain that represents strength and pride and standing up for what's right, which Shaul didn't have that midah, and therefore his mizbeach was destroyed. But Eliyahu HaNavi comes along and rebuilds it in a sign of strength and pride, and in a place where humility is not welcome. So you're standing up against idolaters, you need to stand up tall. Okay. So, right. So then the pasuk ends, Vayisov, Vayavod, Vayered, HaGilgal. So after that, Shaul turns and he goes down to Gilgal. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayavo Shmuel el Shaul. And Shmuel came to Shaul, Vayomer lo Shaul. And Shaul said to Shmuel, Baruch Atah Hashem, you know, Hashem should bless you. Akimosius Tvar Hashem, I have fulfilled the word of Hashem. He's so happy to see Shmuel. He says, Shmuel, you know, I'm so happy to see you, and you're going to be so happy to see me. I'm giving you a bracha because the, I think this is Matsudas David says, he says, I fulfilled the Dvar Hashem that you commanded. So this is a great time for celebration, right? I'm going to give you a bracha. Hashem should bless you. I fulfilled the word of Hashem. Right. There are some Mefarshim who say that he said Akimosius Dvar Hashem, that he believed that, and we talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago, or two times ago, what's the exact mitzvah of destroying Amalek? Is it, does it include all of their livestock, or was that something that was added specifically here? So some Mefarshim say that Shaul believed that Shmuel added to the mitzvah himself that he has to destroy the animals. And so he's like, Akimosius Tvar Hashem, I fulfilled the mitzvah of Hashem. Now Agag, I'm not sure what to say about that, but I fulfilled the mitzvah of Hashem. I didn't fulfill your mitzvah to also destroy the animals, but I fulfilled the mitzvah of Hashem. There are some who learn that way over here. Vayomer Shmuel, and Shmuel said to him, Umeh ko hatzon hazeh be'aznai. If you really fulfill the word of Hashem, so what is the sound of sheep baying in my ears? The kol habakar asher anochi shomei. And what's that sound of cattle that I hear? You were supposed to kill the animals as well. And yet I hear the sound of livestock. So obviously, you did not fulfill the word of Hashem. He knows. He knows. Vayomer, actually, interesting that you point that out. Actually, there are Mefarshim who say, it's a good point, thank you for bringing that up. There are Mefarshim who say that, right, we mentioned way back, why was there a mitzvah to kill the animals? So it could be understood, it's like ir hanidachas, it's like a city of idolaters where you'd have to just destroy everything. Rashi says way at the beginning of the parak that the reason why they had to kill the animals, mishar v'atzeh, pasuk gimel, Rashi says, shehayu balik shafim, because they were, the Amalekim were, they knew magic, but they knew how to turn themselves into animals. And there are those who say that they did. They turned themselves into animals, and the animals that were left alive, or at least some of them, were not really animals. They were people who had turned themselves into animals. So I saw someone says, I forget who it was, someone suggests that Shmuel Hanavi was able to recognize from the bleating and baaing and mooing, whether it was a real animal or whether it was a person that had turned himself into an animal. And he said, and he was saying, if you really fulfill the mitzvah, what's that sound I hear? I hear the sound of sorcerers who have turned themselves into animals. Vayomer Shaul, and Shaul said to me, Amaleki heviyum. I brought them from Amalek, Asher Chamal Ha'om Almeta Vatzon V'Habakar, that the nation has had mercy on the best of the sheep, and on the bakar and on the cattle, L'man Zivoach L'Hashem Elokecha, in order to bring them as karbanos to Hashem, V'Esayos Yecharam, knowing everything else, we destroy. So Shaul HaMelech makes some kind of two excuses. He says, first of all, the way that he says it is, Chamal Ha'am. Oh, that's the animals that the nation had mercy on. That the nation had mercy on. Now, if you look back at Pasuk Tes, so what does Pasuk Tes say? Vayachmo Shaul V'Ha'am Al Agag V'Ameta V'Atzom. It says Shaul and the nation. It was both. It was everyone, you know. It wasn't just the nation. It was Shaul too who was merciful who decided to, we mentioned the Malbim last time that said that the word Hamal, that kind of mercy means that you think that it's something of value that's worth keeping. And he felt that it was worth keeping. But it wasn't just the nation, it was Shaul also. But here, when he's talking to Shmuel, he blames it on the nation. Oh, it's the animals that the nation had mercy on.
So it's not mercy in terms of chesed.
Right. It's they had.
It's all the same. The animals.
Right. It's right. What's a good English word for it? This type of chemla, it doesn't mean rachamim, like mercy. It's
right.
No, but we don't mean it's chemla. We've defined, the Malbim defines it as you think you care for the item because you think it's valuable and worth saving. So it's not that you're merciful. It's that you it's like you care for the item. You want to save it. You're frugal almost. You know, it's a value to you. So.
Maybe their extremism was not equal. Some of them were able to escape, they turned themselves back into humans before
right,
they,
I imagine, right.
When they slaughtered.
So that's one thing. One excuse was, oh, it's the people. And secondly, right, he now brings up for the first time that right, to bring karbanos from them, to bring them as sacrifices, and that was his second excuse here. Now I think it's interesting the word asher that he uses here. What does the word asher mean? So the word asher means that, right? Now, it could have said shechama, right? She also means that. So the Malbim elsewhere has an idea that the word asher for that actually means like it's a it lends support to the action, like from the word ashrei, like fortunate or praiseworthy. Or yashar, it's straight, it's the right thing. So for example, right, there's a chazal that says, we read it this morning, in this morning's leining, we read, halukhos harishonim asher shibarta. The Hashem says that, I don't remember the whole pasuk, but he refers to the first luchos that you broke. Hashem says to Moshe, the luchos that you broke, asher shibarta, that you broke. And there's the Gemara says that Hashem was expressing approval. He was saying, yasher koach sheshibarta. You know that yasher koach, good. It's good that you broke it. So I always thought, you know, it's like a play on words, asher yasher koach. You know, it's similar. But the Malbim says, no, it's much deeper than that. It's not just like similar words. The word asher means I approve of the action. It was ashrei. It was good. Otherwise, you could just say sheh, that. Asher, by definition, lends approval to the action. So over here, Shaul says, asher chamal ha'amal meitav atzon ve'habakar l'man tzolach Hashem elkecha. He's saying this good thing that they did to leave the animals alive in order to bring them as karbanos, that's the sound of the animals that you hear. Just an interesting question in halacha, are you allowed to bring an animal for a karban that you acquire from a Gentile, from a non-Jew? What's the concern? The concern is that if two animals have been involved, if two different species have been involved together, so that would, or if an animal has been involved with the human, I think both. I mean, for sure the second one. I think the first one also. Nirva. So that makes the animal pusli. You're not allowed to bring it as a carbon. So do you have to be choshesh? Do you have to be concerned when you buy an animal from a non-Jew, or acquire an animal from a non-Jew, do you have to be concerned that it's a nirva? that gets not valid to be brought as a karban. So it's a machlokas tanayim. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah has a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah on Daf Chavtal and Amud Beis brings a proof from this pasuk that for the opinion that you are allowed to bring karbanos from animals that belong to non-Jews. You don't have to be choshish, you don't have to be concerned that it's a nirva. Vara says, it brings the pasuk, and it says, so you see, it's a proof that you could bring a karban. Rabbi Eliezer, who holds that you can't, he responds, my metav, demei metav. They were going to get the value of them. They planned to sell them and then use the money for karbanos. And why then did they care to save the best ones? Mara says, in order to be able to sell them easily, they wanted the metav, the best animals, so they could sell them and bring karbanos from the animals that they buy. But that's the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, that you are not allowed to bring them as karbanos, and therefore he says that they plan to sell them. However, the Chachamim say that you are, and the Rambam, that's how we paskin, the Rambam paskins that you are allowed to bring karbanos from animals acquired from Gentiles, and the way the Rambam brings it down is he brings a proof from this pasuk, which is the proof for the Chachamim that you are allowed to.
Is that discussion goes to whether or not Gentiles could bring, sacrifices in the temple itself?
That's a different discussion. That they certainly are allowed to. Right, so that's going to be an interesting question. Are they allowed to bring from their own animal, according to the opinion that says that you're not allowed to use a Gentile's animal for a karban? When a Gentile brings a karban, would he be allowed to bring his own animal or not? It would seem not. It would seem that he would have to acquire, an animal at the once he's inside. Like you go to a stadium, you have to buy from the vendors there. So perhaps, they would have to buy when they arrived, according to this opinion. But we don't paskin that way. We paskin that we could bring from them. So. Okay, Pasuk Tezayin, Hayomer Shmuel al Shaul, and Shmuel said to Shaul, Haref be'agida lecha. He says, wait, and I'm going to tell you, Eis asher diber Hashem elai halayla. I'm going to tell you that which Hashem has told me tonight. Hayomer lo daber. And he said, speak. Hayomer Shmuel. And Shmuel said, hello, in katona ta be'enecha. If you are small in your own eyes, you may be small in your eyes, but Rosh Shifte Yisrael ata. But you are the head of the Shifte Yisrael. You're the head of the Jewish people. Vayim shachacha Hashem v'melech al Yisrael. And Hashem has appointed you as king over all the people. So, again, speaking to Shaul's misplaced humility, you may be small in your eyes, but Rosh Shifte Yisrael, you're the head, you're in charge. You're in charge. So, right, he's responding to what Shaul said. Shaul said, oh, the nation was merciful on the animals. The nation wanted to spare the animals. So, he's saying, his excuse, we know that from the pasuk that really he also wanted to spare them. But even in his presentation to Shmuel, his excuse is, oh, it wasn't me, it was the people. They wanted to spare the animals. They pressured me into sparing the animals. So Shmuel says to him, you may be small in your eyes, and you didn't want to stand up to them, but Rosh Shifte Yisrael, you're the head, you're the man, you're the one who's supposed to keep the people in line, and to prevent them from Averos. How do you allow them to transgress the word of Hashem? And it's considered like you did it, because you could have stopped them. So, right, we know the idea is Som Tosim Alech HaMelech. Hashem says you should place a king over you, and Chazal says you should be placed on you. Alech HaMelech. His fear is supposed to be upon you. The purpose of a king is to be able to avoid these situations, that the nation wants something. You need a strong king who can say, if it's not the right thing, we're not doing it. The Malbim kind of makes a jab at democracy here. He says, right, on the words Vayimshach Acha Hashem LeMelech, Hashem appointed you as king. Says the Malbim, Eincha Kemelech HaNivchar MeHa'am, you're not like a king who's appointed by the people, Asher Yimshach Achar Daitam, who's going to be dragged after their opinions. He's going to have to act based on their opinions. Ki Hashem Mishach Acha, because Hashem has crowned you. So, the Malbim's saying, in the ideal situation, You have a leader who is righteous and strong and someone who, you know, who can lead the people in the right direction, whether they, you know, not based on what they think is the right direction, but based on what he thinks, because he's the Mashiach Hashem. He's been anointed by Hashem. So that's really the ideal situation. Obviously, we don't have that capability nowadays. What?
No, but obviously, like we had King David, King Solomon.
Right.
They were appointed, and they ruled by divine, you know.
Ruach HaKodesh.
Ruach HaKodesh, yeah. So they knew what's the best.
Right.
Now we have
right. We don't have this option, but.
Corrupt, you know, whatever they are.
Right.
With rest for themselves.
Yeah. So, I know the Kuyakar, when he, on the Pasuk of, Som Tosim Alech HaMelech, when he's talking about this idea, that the idea of a king that's appointed by Hashem is that he's not subject to the whims of the people. So he says that on a smaller level, that's how it has to be in a shul, in a base kinesis. You can't have a rav, a rabbi, who has a contract, who's, you know, who if the people like him, so then he's going to stay as the rabbi. And if not, then he'll be fired, because then he can't guide the people. He says, you know, then it's what the people want, and he's subject to their whims unless he's very strong and doesn't care if he's fired, which, you know, he should be, but it's not always the case. So you want your spiritual leader, you know, the person who's supposed to guide you, you know, the kli yakar.
How can we also have a rabbi? That's the way it is now.
Yeah.
Unless somebody, like...
Well, usually, there are some shuls that they're built from the rabbi up, sort of like, you know, you have a group of people that sort of like a certain rabbi, and they say, can we make a shul with you? And, you know, he starts the shul, and ultimately there's a little bit of
but a big contract and salary payment.
Yeah, but no, that's true, but, like... But it's his shul. It's his shul.
The question is, when he's worried what the people think, and he's worried right. about the contract, right. or is he going to say what he thinks is right? And right. And if they want to go, then
In Baltimore, there are many shuls that nobody knows the name of, or they don't refer to it by the name of the shul. It's Rabbi this is shul, and this is Rabbi this is shul, and this is Rabbi this is shul, because the shuls are the rabbi, and each one, the rabbi really creates what kind of shul it is. It's not that the shul created itself and went and found a rabbi that. I mean, it was organic. Is that the right word? It grew together. So.
Right. The smaller ones.
Now, what happens eventually to these shuls is if the rabbi gets older and he retires, then they need a new rabbi. So then it becomes, you know, like many, you know, like most other shuls.
Sometimes the son takes over. Where I grew up, yeah.
Right. The son takes over. Right. Yeah. That shul is a different story.
Yeah. Well,
the son didn't take over there. The son lives in Montreal.
I know. thing. There was a Rabbi Galantis shul, there's another one, there's some of the other Rabbi Spitali, there's a whole
part of it. Right. Anyways, the point is that's the Kliyakar says, that's how a shul should be also, that the Rav's in charge, and that way he has the wherewithal to properly guide the people, and without fear of losing his job. Okay, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Sorry, that's what we just did. Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayishlachecha Hashem b'darech, and Hashem sent you on the way. Vayomer, meaning on this path, basically. He sent you on this path to be king. Vayomer, and he said, or on the path to destroy Amalek, as we'll see. Vayomer, and he said, Leich, go, v'hachar amtoes hachatoim es Amalek, and destroy the sinners, Amalek, v'nilcham tovo, and you should do battle with him, ad kalosam osam, until you destroy them. So there's an extra word here, esachataim es Amalek, right? He says, go and destroy the sinners, Amalek. What is that word coming to teach me? So the Brisker Rav, in his parish on Chumash, I mean, he has comments on Navi also. So the Brisker Rav says that this is a proof for something that the Rambam says, which actually is a very interesting idea. The Rambam says that even Amalek has a chance to surrender to the people. Meaning, there's no mitzvah, according to the Rambam, that just like when we go to battle against a city, we first say, you know, do you surrender? That's how the Torah says it, right? You should call out the shalom. You should call out to them in peace and offer them the chance to surrender. The Rambam passes that's true even for Amalek. We offer them the option to surrender and to become subdued and become under the rule of the Jewish people.
And that worked. If they survive, assuming they don't convert, so then you have a situation like what happened with Agar. He sent them down the line. So you can walk away, like, you can pull your gun and shoot it. So again, we say he's a rogue.
Seems to be like getting rid of the thing.
So it's a white man.
Yeah, I mean, I hear. It's a new idea to me, this Rambam, but that's what he says. I guess even in Amalek, you can, right, like we say, b'nei banav shalham amam du Torah b'nei brak, or however it goes. Okay, but maybe they don't have to. I don't know if they have to convert to Yadus, but they could convert to non-Amaleki, to Ger Tosha. They can give up their hashkafos, their Amaleki hashkafos, and subdue themselves before the Jewish people. So that's what he says. And the Brisker Rav says that perhaps the source for the Rambam is this pasuk Yud Ches, because this extra word hachatoim, that the command was go destroy the chatoim Amalek, meaning the singers amongst Amalek, as opposed to the exclusion of those who would not be chatoim, those who would not be singers, those who would surrender and come under the rule of the Jewish people. Yeah.
Does the Rambam's opinion extend to talking about the nations of Palestine that they're supposed to destroy? You know?
Good question. Good question. He talks about that here. So
you have defense of self-defense. Malik is not one of those.
Yeah, so there was a mitzvah to destroy the Zion Amamim, the seven nations as well. Now, what I mean, it's a general question, really. What's the difference between the mitzvah to destroy Amalek and the mitzvah to destroy the Zion Am, the seven nations of Canaan?
I thought in the seven they had to give them like the option to leave.
He could have and should have done that.
Yeah, so that's so.
What do we say? No, Lord, he is doing
that. Then they didn't leave. They didn't want to leave. The leave.
Comes after him, he would have the right to kill him.
As they were.
One last point.
To me, at least.
We've been saying all along.
It seems like a different.
We've been saying all along.
Why you don't want to write? Well, you don't want them to exist. The nations that were in.
Why?
Right.
Not, they weren't
right.
supposed
so,
to be in Eretz Israel and like it'd be influenced.
Right. So that's what he says here. The part of the question is specifically according to the Rambam that the Rambam holds that you're supposed to be mashin, supposed to offer peace to both of them. So meaning it sounds like even the seven nations of Canaan, they don't have to leave. They don't have to but they do have they would have to give in, surrender. So if so, what's the difference between Amalek and the Shiva Amim? So Zav suggests that the difference is that is the offer to leave, right? That I guess Amalek, they either have to say, you know, we surrender to your ideals, to your ideas. They can't just get up and move somewhere else, because then they're still Amalek. And if they're still Amalek, then we have to destroy them. If they convert or they surrender, so that's acceptable. But they can't just move. As opposed to, like you're saying, the Zion Amamin, so they had the option. They didn't have to surrender. They could and change their way of life, but they could get up and go. And indeed, the Girgashi, one of the nations, did that, and they moved down to Africa. That's one possible difference. Okay. Pasuk Yates Vilama Lo Shamata Bekol Hashem. Shmuel says, why did you not listen to the word of Hashem? Batat al Ashalal, you hurried towards the booty, the bounty, Vatas Arab Ene Hashem, and you did evil in the eyes of Hashem. So the Mefarshim ask over here, the Chavetz Chaim, it's brought down in his name, what does Shmuel mean, Vatas Harab in Hashem, that you did bad in the eyes of Hashem? Okay, I think you could say, meaning what his question is, that did Shaul do something bad, or he just didn't do everything good, meaning he didn't fully fulfill the mitzvah? You know, he was commanded to kill Amalek. He basically did. You know, he left a few people alive, a one person, a few animals. But did he do ra? Did he do something that was evil?
Like, two different things, though. One, so to speak, spoils and derails.
I don't know. Well, I mean, what did he do? That's the question. What's Vatas Arab in Hashem? What did he do that was bad? Maybe he didn't do the full mitzvah, but did he do something evil, something bad? So the Chavetz Chaim answered that since he didn't fulfill the whole mitzvah, so he didn't do anything. He didn't do the mitzvah. The mitzvah was to destroy all of Amalek. To destroy 90% is not the mitzvah. To destroy 99% is not the mitzvah. So he didn't do the mitzvah. So what did he do? He killed a bunch of people. He killed a bunch of people. That's all he did. If he didn't do the mitzvah, then what he's left with is just blood on his hands for killing all these people. So and that was the ra. That's what was evil. Mishpat Zav ties that into to what we have in this week's parsha, where Pinchas, right? We read yesterday, he kills Zimri and Cosby, puts a spear through them. Beginning of Parshas Pinchas says Hashem's nosing lo brisi shalom. Hashem gives him a covenant of peace. You know, he kills someone and Hashem gives him a covenant of peace. What's going on? What's the connection? So the Netziv says in Hamik Davar that because when a person does an act of achzarios, of cruelty, of something violent, so it has an impact on them, and it makes them by nature more violent and more likely to do that kind of thing again. So, but since he did it l'shem shamayim, he did it for the sake of heaven. So Hashem blesses him with a blessing of peace, that he won't be affected by this. He won't become more violent. And the truth is that we have the same concept. We have the same concept by Ir Hanidachas, and there it's more explicit in the Torah. Over there, so I think it's in Parshas Shoftim, Yud Gimel Yud Ches. So in Dvarim Yud Gimel Yud Ches. So it says, after it talks about destroying a city of idolaters, at Ir Hanidachas, the pasuk says, "V'nasang l'cha rachamim, Hashem will give you mercy, v'rim chamcha, v'hirbecha, and he'll have mercy on you, v'hirbecha, he'll increase you." But the understanding here is this idea that kisishma v'kashim el kecha, lishmaras kol mitzvosav, when you listen to Hashem's voice, to following his mitzvah. So the Mefarshim learn over here also that was the idea that even though such an action is likely to have an effect on a person, or because it's likely to have an effect on a person, so therefore Hashem has to give them a bracha of rachamim, of peace. Right? Let's see. Right, it's the Arachaim. The art scroll brings it down from the Arachaim HaKadosh. The punishment of the wayward city, a mass execution even of its livestock, could easily make the agents of the court and the general population callous to suffering. It could be expected to erode their natural feelings of mercy and make them heartless and cruel. In response to this fear, the Torah promises that God will infuse them with new feelings of sensitivity and compassion. And once the people have become more merciful than ever, they will deserve to be treated mercifully by God, etc. So Hashem will make you merciful, and then he'll be merciful upon you. So that's part of where Shaul went wrong here. He didn't fulfill the mitzvah. It wasn't l'shem shamayim. It wasn't, otherwise he would have done the whole mitzvah. And therefore, it's rabbi in Hashem. It's bad in the eyes of Hashem, and it's going to have a negative effect on him, because he won't be blessed with this bracha for peace. Okay, we will hold there.